It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Good evening, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervie, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan Gervie and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And I'm sitting across from Lauren Savon, a radio professional, and she's looking at me like she wants to say something.
You're using your radio voice to open the show.
I always do.
No, you open it very deep radio voice, right. And then somewhere along the line, we get into
that
high-pitched,
screechy,
inquisitive Alan.
It's not inquisitive. It's just kind of a non-radio.
It's a sexy radio voice that you're opening.
Well,
with.
I'm trying to do it, but I forget about it. See, I start this way, and it's very canned the way I say that stilly line about being the managing partner of your life. I've managed no one's life. What about you, Lauren?
I can't even manage my own. I'm here to be managed.
Yeah. Well, we all are, I think. It's very hard to manage your own life. And we're going to be taking a little hiatus. We haven't announced it, but in a couple shows, we're going to take off some time. What do you plan to do? Can you, tell us how you're going to come back to, manage people's lives?
I don't manage the life. That's your gig.
Oh.
I come here for management, so I feel that on our time off, I'm going to probably have you on speed dial in case I need some extra help.
Oh, you handle yourself very well. You just want to hear my voice, but you'll have to specify which voice you want to hear. You want to hear that high-pitched, out-of-control, emotional voice.
Right. Or the
canned
confident sexy radio voice.
Sexy radio voice, FM radio.
That's right.
So we have a great show today.
We do.
I'm going to try and keep down. I think it all has to do, Lauren, with your mental state.
Mm.
And if I stay calm, in court, I can be arguing a case and I'm doing really well, and then something happens and I'm going, objection.
When
I said
you
that,
you need to keep that under control.
It reminded me of Kirk Cameron. Yeah. When
growing
I just said,
pains?
Objection! Growing Pains. There was an episode of Growing Pains where he saw this really cute girl across the dance floor, and he started, waving to her. He didn't know her.
Right.
And he went through the crowd to see her, and she was really cute, and he was really into it, and he said to her, would you like to dance or talk? And she said, what would you like to do?
Oh.
And he said, let's dance. And he pulled her arm because he didn't want to hear that screechy voice.
Sure.
So at that moment, I felt like I was...
You were the girl at the dance.
I was the girl at the dance, and no one wants to hear the screechy voice. So are you a track and field fan?
Fan, yeah.
Did you ever run when you were a kid?
I'm a terrible runner.
Really?
Terrible.
I could never tell.
The reason I wasn't great at sports, I think, is because I was a slow runner.
Really?
I played lacrosse. I played field hockey.
Yeah.
I played badly.
being a fast... you hit on a good point here. Being a fast runner really helps you in sports.
In every sport, yeah.
I was a fast runner.
Oh, see?
I had our school record in the 400 and the 200. I was a sprinter. I was really bad at cross country. They tried to... in the off season when I wasn't running sprints, they were trying to get me into cross country. I was terrible. I couldn't finish. I gave up. I was a quitter. But for 100 or 200 or 400 meters, I could run quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it helped me in my baseball career. I was the leading...
Sure.
Stolen base guy, and I had triples because I was just so fast. But I can see. Can you imagine running that fast and obviously faster than me without having your vision?
No.
Unbelievable. And this is something, this story is really important for people, and he's such an inspiration. Before we introduce David Brown, I do want everyone to stay tuned for the second part of the show. Who do we have on the second part, Lauren?
Petri Hawkins Bird.
Just call him the bird.
You may not recognize his full name, but you may recognize the bird
That's right.
The former bailiff from Judge Judy.
Judge Everybody's Judy, 25 years. Yeah. 25 years he was Judge Judy's bailiff. And Judge Judy has a new show, and Bert isn't on it. And we're going to hear about it, what happened, why he's not on the new show. Yeah. So, you know, what his feelings are about Judge Judy. Maybe we can hear some comments, learn a little bit more about Judge Judy, although I don't think they were that close. In 25 years, I don't think she really spoke to him too much, as that's what I read. So we'll find that out. I can't imagine, because in my office, you know, I've had people for 25 years and, you know, we talk all the time.
Do you know the bailiffs when you go to court?
No.
Yeah.
No. You just kind of nod your head like, you know, hey.
Hey.
What's happening?
Up, dude?
Yeah, what's up? That's about it. Yeah. So, all right, well, let's bring David on. I want to
I'm really excited to talk to him.
David is the world's fastest visually impaired sprinter. And we're not just saying that. He's proven it at the Rio Paralympics.
Like, we would just say that.
Well, you could say it. It's fluff. But he's actually backed it up.
He's got the numbers, yeah.
I don't know that they call him the numbers, but he's... Exactly. He's got the numbers. Let's just say that. Rio Games in 2016, he ran a 10.99. You have no idea what a 10.99 is. That is amazing. I mean, for someone who is not visually impaired, it is an amazing time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for someone who is, and he ran that with his partner Jerome Avery at the time in the men's 100 meter to take home the gold. He also was a two-time Paralympian. So he, or three-time now, including Tokyo, and he had that new record, 10.99. He's been totally blind since he was 13 years old, and it's really amazing and an honor to talk with you today. David Brown, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you all for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you on. I mean, we have so many questions. You've accomplished so much. And not only that, I think probably one of your greatest accomplishments is to inspire others, people who may have disabilities or impairments, and to inspire them to do something that is just beyond what anyone would expect someone to have the motivation to do. Where does it come from, David? Where did you get this kind of motivation to achieve what you've achieved?
I mean, with how I am having a visually impairment, anybody that has a disability that's in the Paralympics, you know, we're there as athletes and we're there to compete. You know, we have to adapt to the situation that we're, you know, placed right there in front of us. Where my inspiration comes first and foremost is from my faith. My slogan is running for his glory. Everything I do it for the glory of God. And at the same time, just growing up with inspirational people in my life, sort of in the sports realm, looking towards people like Muhammad Ali or Michael Jordan, you know, like what were they doing in order to motivate themselves, you know, just mimic them and then try to get myself into that mindset too.
How did your running career start off?
That's actually pretty funny. So I was 6 years old and I started going blind in my right eye. And I started getting slapped in the face with a basketball. And so all of a sudden I'm like, hey, I can still see well enough to run. So I started running and competing against my friends on the playground and found out I had some speed there. So I continued on running throughout elementary school. 11 years old, I moved to the Missouri School for the Blind, that's in St. Louis, and got involved with track there. And I guess you could say the rest is history as far as like track and field goes, but I was involved with other sports and stuff, but that's kind of how my running got started.
So you kind of pivoted from, from basketball. Wow.
Tell us, you know, it's interesting to hear that evolution, but tell us from the medical perspective, you had something called Kawasaki disease at 15 months old, and gradually you lost sight in one eye, and then by 13, both. Tell us a little bit about what that disease is and how you've learned to deal with it.
Yeah, so crazy enough, Kawasaki disease is a rare disease, first off. I didn't really discover too much about it and like the, I guess you could say severity of it until a few years ago. I'm also a licensed holistic health and massage therapist practitioner. And it was going through one of my anatomy classes where I actually gained a better understanding of what Kawasaki's disease is. So the disease itself is an autoimmune disease. Your white blood cells, it can attack any part of your body, your organs. A lot of the time it may attack your heart, your kidneys and stuff like that. Mine went to my eyes. You know, there is a white blood cell kind of like lymph nodes right there by your eye. I don't know what we don't know what causes it. That's still to this day, we don't know the cause of it. Mine went to my eyes, gave me glaucoma. When I was 3 years old, I had a surgery for my left eye, caused it to shrink into its eye socket. So I don't really have too much memory of me being able to see out of my left eye. I do have a prosthetic shell there. And 6 years old, that's when my vision started decreasing, like I mentioned, in my right eye. And I had good 20/20 vision in that eye for a while, and then it just gradually started decreasing over the years. So little by little, I was losing sight. And then 13 years old, it left me with being able to only see light perception, shape, shadows, colors, and some figures. You know, I can see movement, but I can't really tell, like, I guess, direction on which way they're going and all that good stuff.
Wow. Just incredible.
It is really something. And then at some point you were completely blind, correct?
When I'm completely blind, I guess you could say when I have like no light perception at all is only when I run. And that's due to me being able to run with blinders on. When I'm running, my sight doesn't do me any well at already. So the classification that I'm in is T11. T stands for track. 11 is the indication of blindness. We're on the lowest class there is. That puts everybody on an equal playing field to have those blinders on. That's the only time I'm like completely blind. My left eye, I'm completely blind in. My right eye, I have light perception, and that can put me at an advantage over one of my competitors. Okay. So to make everybody equal, we just black everybody else.
You know, I want to talk, we have to take a break, but we'll talk about that after the break, about your actual running, because it is quite incredible how you've been able to do that. So we'll talk about that when you and I and Lauren return, and everyone listening right here on Gervais Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC. We're back right here at Gervais Law. Hey, Lauren, is my voice still hanging in there
still
for the radio?
It.
I still do. Okay, let me know when I start getting high-pitched. You know, we're talking to David Brown, who is the world's fastest visually impaired sprinter. And it's really incredible. If you ever want to see him run, go on YouTube and check it out. I want to ask you, David, because you've previously run with Jerome Avery, and these guys who, and now with Murray Stewart, these are super fast sprinters in their own right. They cannot be running with you as a partner unless they can, for instance, break 11 or be in that time range, 11 to a little bit more than 11. Tell us how you find the partners and why they would do this, where they're running with you versus running on their own.
Yeah, so how we go about finding different guides is, you know, through, I guess you could say, multiple different avenues. Jerome Avery, he was already a guide runner when I came around as far as competing goes. And he started out guiding in 2004. So that was already kind of right there. He was an Olympic athlete himself, came up short at the Olympic trials, and turned guide runner from there. You know, he had the opportunity to be a guide runner, and so he took up on that opportunity and continued guiding afterwards. How we came across Murray Stewart is he's a college athlete, a collegiate athlete. He runs for his college. We contacted his coach, asked a question on, hey, do you know anybody that could be a potential guide, you know, or anybody that fits these criteria? And he suggested Murray. And of course, this, as you mentioned, isn't an easy task. You know, we put our guides through, you can say, a guide running boot camp, So we put them through multiple tests in the sense of, okay, well, how fast are you? Are you capable of adapting to my speed and my technique? Because the guide has to adapt to the athlete. We're synchronizing our steps all the way down the track and tethered together by our hands. And not only are we tethered together by our hands, it's something that a lot of people do not see is my guide is actually talking to me while he's running.
Wow.
So I have to run at a certain speed in order to be able to guide me comfortably and be able to talk and tell me where I am on the track at all times.
That's
incredible.
Yeah, when you think about it, and I didn't realize that either. You know, I've watched you run, and it's moving so quickly, especially the 100, 200 to a degree, but it's moving so quickly, you don't realize that there's communication. I mean, you're just flat out running. One of the questions that I had, though, when I was looking at the different Paralympics and the events, why is it that they have different disabilities, for instance, in the 100 meters? Like this year in Tokyo, you didn't take home the gold. But I looked and saw the guys who were ahead of you were amputees, I think, mainly. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
So how do they do that? They don't do you, and you do have not the Paralympics, but other events where it's just visually impaired sprinters, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But not at the Paralympics?
Excuse me? What do you say?
But not at the Paralympics. Like in Tokyo, for instance, you're competing against other disabilities, not just visually impaired.
Oh, no. See, so at the Paralympics, we are competing against those who are actually other, like blind.
Yeah.
So within the Paralympics ourselves, you know, we are competing against those ones who are in the same classification as you. So the ones who are amputees and stuff, you know, they'll compete against other amputees. So you have 64s and 63s, you know, and that just indicates what class you are in. So above the knee, below. Yeah, that's just fancy numbers. You know, so of course they will compete against each other as well. And then I will compete against all those other ones who are just like me in the sense of totally blind. We all have blinders on. Now there are different classes of blindness. You know, like I mentioned, I'm on the lowest class there is. The T12 class, you know, they have a little more sight. And then the T13, they don't run with guides. And they are pretty much as close to an Olympian as you can get in the sense of visual acuity. And I guess you could say just running by themselves, you know, they got single lanes and they can stay in their lane. If I try to stay in my lane without a guide, you know, I'm on the inside or the outside. And either way, I'm getting hurt.
Right.
Yeah.
So the thing is, too, so that's at the Paralympic Games. Here in the USA, when we're going about picking a team, choosing a team at our nationals, that's when we're kind of competing against other classifications because now we're competing for a slot. We have to hit a certain standard that gets converted into a percentage, and then that gets placed into a box. And then depending on how many people we could to take to the games, they'll count down that number, draw a line right underneath the, you know, last person, and then boom, there's your team. So now you're not just competing against those that are in your classification, but you're competing against everybody else for a spot on the team. That's only here in USA. Yeah.
I see.
Huh.
You know,
I didn't know that's how it worked. Yeah.
It's interesting. But when you talk about having the fastest time to be the world record holder in the 100 meter and the 200, that's only visually impaired, correct?
Yeah, that's only visually impaired athletes. And sadly, this year in Tokyo, somebody, you know, ran faster than my world record. I'm no longer considered the fastest totally blind athlete in the 100 meters, but I still have it in the 200.
So what was that time in the 100? Because you had established at 10.99.
Well, see, that's the Paralympic record, actually. So 10.99 is the Paralympic record, and then the world record is 10.92. So I ran that in 2014. 2 years later, I ran 10.99 and ran the Paralympic record. Those can only be broken at the games themselves. My 10.92 was broken by a guy from Greece, and he ran 10.82.
Wow.
So, yeah. He's moving.
did you know him, or was that just came out of the blue, kind of?
Actually, he just came out of the blue. I saw him in the call room. I was in his heat. In the semifinals, I didn't advance on. It was one of them things, but hey, it happened. And yeah, I mean, I don't really know him. Would love to get some, I guess you could say, shake his hand, talk to him, yeah, chop it up with eventually. But you know, yeah, I mean, yeah, that happened.
That's quick. Yeah, that's fast. There a lot of camaraderie amongst you? Like, because you're seeing each other at the events?
You can say amongst some athletes, there are some athletes that are difficult or hard speaking English, or you know,
right?
Even, oh, that's true. Yeah,
stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, I kind of have those barriers that you have to overcome. I'm really cool with a lot of my competitors because coming up, of course, I break the world record. I'm competing against these guys. They're hitting me up, chatting with me like, "Hey, Brown, you know what's up?" And I'm just that kind of person. I like to talk to anybody and everybody already. So
you're pretty easy to talk to. I can confirm.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Growing up with watching these guys, actually, too, because I've been watching them compete since Beijing, China. 2012 was my first time competing against them. You know, I guess you could say we grew kind of a friendship. This guy from Greece is pretty new to the classification. He just came out, actually, this year.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, but that's what happens sometimes at the games. You know, you get those people that just come out of, you know, anywhere, and it's like, who's this guy? Like in the Olympics themselves, yeah, a guy from Italy won the 100 meters this year, and it's like, wait, who's this guy?
Right. Yeah, Jacob. No, yeah, yeah, that was something to see him come out of nowhere.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you take special pay attention to the Olympics because a lot of fellow athletes. When you are, like you said, you found Murray Stewart. Are you going to continue with Murray running as your partner?
Yeah, me and Murray, we are going to continue to run together. It is one of them situations, though, where it's tricky because he is still a collegiate athlete.
Yeah.
You know, we still encourage our guide runners at the same time. If you have a goal of making the Olympics, you know, go for it. You know, if you have a goal of making a D1 school, you know, go for it. You know, whatever your goal is, we don't want to deteriorate, you know, anybody from going
right
for their goal at the same time. You know, but just remember at the same time, you know, we do say this, like if you're employed by U.S. Paralympics, your first priority is to be a guide. So make sure you're doing your job. At the
yeah.
same
but
time.
You can still but, get a medal now that the yeah, the partner. So if you're not going to get a gold medal in the Olympics, then, you know, maybe you get it in the Paralympics or in other track events.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of them things where it's like, OK, if you are an Olympic hopeful, you know, and you don't really see yourself getting a medal and the Olympics, yo, you can possibly be a guide runner and come over and be a
and run with David Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, currently I'm looking in the for a guide for the 400. So
all right, we'll put it out there.
Yeah.
Anyone listening, you want to run with David in the 400, a little tougher.
Yeah, you got to know how to run and talk.
Yeah.
And be tethered. And yeah, it's a full job. I had no idea. We only have about a minute left, but I just want to ask you, you know, I hear you throwing it out there to find a guide for the 400. What else you got planned for the future coming up?
So I'm planning on the 400, of course, in the up and coming years. Of course, we'll still continue to run in the 100 meters because we do still have Murray as well as another guide as well that's willing to help out and be a guide. And then of course something else is possibly, and I'll just say this now, you know, it's not official yet, but a possible sport change. We're starting blind soccer here.
Wow. Oh, that's exciting.
So yeah, maybe a part of the blind soccer team going towards Los Angeles.
Wow.
So.
that'd be
very
are
cool.
You still training at the U.S. Olympic Training Center in Chula Vista?
Yeah, I'm still training there. Of course, I live off-site. Like, right now, I'm at home. I just got done training this morning and, you know, made it back here. And, yeah.
Well, we appreciate that.
David
you know,
Brown, it's
such fascinating.
Such a great, yeah. Thank you so much for talking to us. I learned so much.
If anyone wants to check out David Brown. Amazing story and real inspiration. Really an inspiration. We appreciate you helping others by motivating them through speaking to them and, you know, showing by example. Thanks for being with us today, David.
Thank y'all for having me again.
All right, take care. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back after the break with Petrie Hawkins-Bird, the
former
Judge
bailiff.
Judy bailiff, right here on Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC. are back. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. I'm here with Lauren Savon, and we are going to sprint from one area without looking.
Nice transition. Yeah.
Yes. I'm not going to make any visual anecdotes here. We'll get right to our next guest, from David Brown to Petrie Hawkins Bird. Now, I know
Birdman.
I know, Lauren, that you were a big fan of all of the court shows, television shows,
starting with the very first, the People's Court.
Oh, the People's Court, Rusty, with
Judge Wapner, and the famous bailiff, Rusty.
Oh yeah, yeah. Who can forget?
As kids,
him?
we would play People's Court, and I always wanted to be Rusty.
And you know, it's funny because Bird, I'm sure.
Perhaps watch the same.
I don't know. We'll ask him. But I know that when he wrote his letter to Judge Judy, you know, he offered his services. So, you know, I a few weeks ago we had Lynn Toler on. Mm-hmm. She was really amazing from the divorce court.
Right.
So this is an area where there's so much interest. And Petrie Hawkins Bird was with Judge Judy for approximately 25 seasons of the show. Definitely television's longest court show bailiff in history. And I think most well-known. He's so well-loved. All you have to do is mention his name. And if people don't know him by name, of course they know him by face. People just have been so enamored
by voice, too. Yeah.
His personality and his input. And it's really a pleasure, Bert, to have you on Gervie's Law today. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
We are doing great.
There it is. There's the voice.
There it is, the voice. You know, we got to tell you, you've had such a successful run, and you've done other things. People don't understand that Bird, he's an actor, a voice actor. You listen to The Voice. He's done a couple recent voiceovers, writer, and former New York State court officer. Is that where it all began, being the New York State court officer, before you became this glamorous actor and
Hollywood icon?
Hollywood.
Wow. Hold on. My hat band's getting tighter as I talk to you.
That's funny.
It all started in a 5,000-watt radio station in Fresno. No, it started in New York. It started in New York as a New York State court officer. That is where I met Her Honor. And, I moved out to California in 1990, and I was living in Northern California. I left law enforcement. I was working as a high school counselor at a high school in Santa Clara. One day I happened to read about her in the paper. I was reading Liz Smith's gossip column.
Yeah.
And I get to the end of the gossip column and I see this name I know, like Judge Judy Shineland, and, you know, said that she had written a book, Don't Pee on My Leg and Tell Me It's Raining. And yeah. I was like, yep, that's her. That's her, yeah. You know, and that they were developing a TV show for her. I got excited, wrote her a letter. And it's funny that you guys had mentioned the People's Court and Rusty, because what I actually said verbatim at the end of the letter was, P.S., if you ever need a Rusty for your Judge Wapner, I still look good in uniform.
Well, that's
that was
funny.
That was my little joke. Well, that little joke wound up turning into 25 years.
Wow.
Being what I called Rusty's black brother, Corrosion. It was just a remarkable thing that, you know, a really crazy thing that happened, but it happened right on time.
Hey, Bert, did she respond personally, or did you hear from the production crew? How did that go?
No. So at that point, funny thing, at that point, there was no production crew. There was just, you know, an interest in getting her to do this show. Mm. And so she called me personally. In fact, she called my home, and my wife gave her my job number. And she called my job, and that's when, you know, like one of my tech assistants, one of the kids, picked up the phone, and I heard her going, "Yes, Mr. Bird is here. Hold on." And she looked at me and she went, "Mr. Bird, the judge?" I went, "The judge? Give me that." And as soon as I picked up the phone, she went, "Officer Bird, this is Judge Shineland." And I was like, "Oh my goodness." I was totally thrown, man, because you know, this was a voice I hadn't heard in 5 years at that point. So
what's fascinating,
it was pretty remarkable hearing from her.
I bet. And then, you know, then it led to this incredible career. But what's fascinating to me is you knew her before the show. So I heard you mention earlier, you know, that sounds like her. Was she the same Judge Judy on TV as she was before her fame?
You know what? She was pretty much the same, you know, very acerbic, very,
no nonsense,
very witty, you know, no nonsense, you know, to the point, you know, and, you know, so that was the reason why as soon as I heard her voice, I was like, "Oh my God, this is, you know, this is Judge Shineland." And it's funny because that's all I knew her. I didn't know she had a first name. I thought her first name was Judge.
You know? Judge. That's true. And, when you're talking about the real courts, it's Shineland. No one's calling her Judge Judy. What kind of, and we'll get to the Judge Judy show, but before, what kind of matters were being heard before she did the show? Because obviously on the show, there were some issues that came up that would never see a courtroom. But what about before?
Well, before, you know, she was a judge in Manhattan Family Court. Mm-hmm. So she dealt with child neglect and child abuse cases. She dealt with juvenile justice cases. So kids under 16 years old in New York, they have their cases adjudicated in family court. You know, so she dealt with those dockets, adoptions, cases of orders of protection. You know, so those were mainly the you know, any family oriented cases, that's what she dealt with.
So she obviously is still doing a show, illustrious career, is one of them, probably the most famous judge, I would say, of all the TV shows. Definitely the highest paid, right?
Well, when Judge Wapner was doing it, they weren't paying that much.
No, but they have a bunch of different courts. She has the highest paid.
I think Wapner was pretty pissed off, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure he was.
I bet.
He was in the wrong era.
Probably Rusty, too, for that matter.
Exactly. You know, you go, well, hey, Bill Russell, one of the greatest of all times, he made nowhere near the money that, you know, Michael Jordan or LeBron James made.
Exactly.
Yeah, no question about it. We were having Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on our show a few months ago, and he actually wanted money. I didn't understand that. No one pays to be on the show, but actually it was for a donation. But that, you got that right. They lived in a different generation. And when you look at the contracts now versus the contracts way back when, there's no comparison.
So Lauren, is this his way of telling me that I'm not getting paid for this?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I'm so sorry. I had to find out on the
air. But that's okay. That's okay.
You're breaking up.
you're doing a community service. You got a great personality. I think that was one of the things that so many people enjoyed on the show, that, you know, you didn't say a lot, but when you did, people listened because it was really kind of not only entertaining, but there was a warmth to it that everyone looked to you. And when you looked at Judge Judy, a lot of people didn't see that warmth. Tell us about, before we go to break, tell us a little bit about your relationship with her, because I had read that she wasn't exactly warm and fuzzy on the show.
Well, no, first of all, she wasn't known for that. And the other thing is that, you know, when I think when you start to play to a type that you are or that you're perceived to be, after a while you wind up doing more of it as opposed to, you know, opposed to backing up from it. You really press in, you know. So if you're known as, hey, you know, she's the mean woman, then you become really mean.
Right.
You know.
You gotta live up to that.
That's pretty much it.
She wasn't really personal with you, Bird, was she? Like, she didn't really get into your kids or your family. Wasn't that kind of relationship, was it?
I gotta admit, it was an odd sort of relationship in that, you know, we were friendly, we were cordial with each other, we were good coworkers, you know. But you know, as I've said, you know, I was never invited over to the house, and you know, and hey, listen, you know, we're going to the south of France, right, on my yacht. So, you know, did you want to bring the family and come along? It was like, I think we'll just spend the summer in the backyard per usual, you know. So now it wasn't that kind of relationship over the years.
Yeah. Well, we got to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about how things are now, yeah, and this new show that they kind of didn't invite you to do. We want to get into that a little bit and find out what you're doing. Yeah. So,
sure.
Really nice to have you, Bird. It's a lot of fun. So, we have one more segment here on Gervie's Law. Lauren is excited.
I'm excited.
I can tell you. We'll be right back. You listen to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. All right, we're back. Art, you're in a hurry today. You're just getting it. It's like I was serving hot lunch at my kid's school, and the women, I was the only man there.
Are you
there.
A lunch lady? The women,
I am. I go once a month or so. And they were so quick. They were just getting through. I was like, what's going on? You want these kids to go back to school? Like, they're just zipping them through. And, you know, I was a syrup man today. They had
syrup.
Yeah, it was chicken and waffles. Steward. Chicken and waffles. And I had this squirter, a syrup squirter.
Oh, my
goodness.
And
I was squirting all the kids with syrup. And I don't think I'm going to be invited back.
Nothing better than sticky kids headed back.
Yeah,
to class.
Yeah, but it really moves. So this is my day is, really moving quickly. We have with us Petri Hawkins Bird, and he spent approximately 25 seasons with Judge Judy, television's longest court show bailiff in history, beat all of the other bailiffs, and, really great personality. And I know you got to know Lynn Toler a little bit. She was on the show. She's divorce court, justice on divorce court. Didn't she seem a little more like, you know, when we talked to Lynn, she's so much more like you than Judge Judy would ever seem to be.
It's funny. So just to let you know, my wife and I have a podcast that we do once a week. Matter of fact, it's on Tuesday, and we'll be doing it this evening. But last week, our guest was Lynn Toler.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And to show you what a great person she is, I think I called her the night before. I did. I called her the night before and asked her, would she be, because we were watching her on Celebrity Boot Camp.
Right.
Marriage Boot Camp.
Right, yeah.
And she's the person that she has always been as long as I've known her. You know, she's straight up. She's witty. She's charming, everything.
Right.
I just took a chance. I texted her and I said, hey, Lynn, would you mind coming on our podcast tomorrow night? And she said, yes.
Amazing.
Just that simple.
Yeah, she's...
And so I was like, okay, you know that you have to do this. And I gave her kind of the hoops that she would have to go through in order to come on. And she goes, well, I don't know if I have that on my computer, but I'll download it and we'll get it done. And she came on the next day and she was brilliant. She you know, man, what a great interview we had with her and a great time we had with her. So
yeah. And what's the name of your podcast?
The name of the podcast is Bonding with Bird. My wife's name is Makita Bond, and she is a former producer on the Judge Judy show.
Oh wow!
And we decided last year we were killing time. We were out of work and we were making each other laugh, and we decided to take it on social media.
How can people find Bird? How do the people bonding with Bird? If people want to listen. How do they find you?
Just put Bonding with Bird in your YouTube search engine. As soon as you put Bonding, that's the first thing that will come up.
Cool.
Bonding with Bird, BYRD, and it'll take you right to the site. It'll take you to the live version tonight, and we have probably about 60 episodes archived on YouTube.
Oh, great! Yeah, it's worth checking out.
Yeah, we do hot topics, and we have different segments of the show. And every now and then, we're blessed to have a great guest on there. We've had some wonderful guests on there: musical guests, comedians, Judge Lynn Tola, like I said last week. We've just been having a ball doing it. Yeah. You know.
You know, I wanted to ask you because you mentioned, you know, you were out of work, both out of work. So let's get to the elephant in the room here. Apparently, Judge Judy is doing a new show. IMDb TV. I think it's supposed to debut November 1st.
Exactly.
And we just got to put it this way. Why aren't you on the show, man? That doesn't make sense.
I love the way you pussyfoot around, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly.
So, man, why?
Yeah.
So here's the deal. Here's the deal. And this is what I've been saying for the past couple of weeks, almost ad nauseum. The simple answer to that is I was not asked to go. Okay? I wasn't asked to come along. And I understand that. This is the entertainment business, and you know, sometimes you put in 25 years and you look and somebody goes, "Hey, come along for the rest of the ride," or they go, you know, "Hey, your time is up." So I liken it to being Batman and Robin all these years, and all of a sudden, you know, Robin is standing on the corner waiting for Batman to show up in the Batmobile, and Batman shows up and there's somebody else sitting in there, and Robin goes, "Well, hey, who's that?" And
right.
He goes, "Oh, that's Melvin."
But it's not Melvin.
No, it doesn't even sound right.
Yeah. The dude who's doing it, you knew him. Wasn't he like a junior bailiff on Judge Judy?
No, what he was the judge's personal security on the set.
Really? You know?
Right. So his sole assignment was to be assigned to her while she was on the set.
Well, what kind of certification do you need to be a bailiff? I have no idea.
School education.
Oh, but you don't have to go through any kind of, I don't know, law school training.
Or order in the court.
To keep order in the court, boot camp. There's no bailiff boot camp. What about that show?
The bailiff boot camp is, can you stay awake for hours and hours and hours of testimony? If you can do that, you can be a bailiff.
That's great.
Wow.
You got to do that in stand-up. That's funny.
There you go.
But what about, you did have a couple of instances where people got unruly, out of line in 25 years. You must have had to pull someone by the coattails out of the room.
I'll be honest with you. In 25 years, I had pretty much zero encounters. The one encounter that I actually had occurred. A guy was really, really his crew was getting ready to go off. So he had maybe three people back there, and the defendant had three people back there, and they were getting ready to go at it. And I did what I always do, and not necessarily trained to do, but what I always do is I go to the center of the storm. I grab that person by the shirt or the collar or the throat or whatever, and I go, "If anything happens here, you're going to be the first one to get it."
Oh.
And that's
and that
it.
Usually, and that was it. Calms the storm.
And in that instance, the person did exactly what I expected them to do. What was like, "Hey, yo, cut it out."
Yeah, everything was cool. Wow, it's amazing. Too bad you didn't get to do that more often. That would have been fun. That would have been a whole different show.
Yeah.
I had so many people looking forward to that. You know, Birdman, yeah. You know, why don't you just take that guy and throw him out? And I'm like, because of the impending lawsuit that would not cover me on. You know,
exactly.
I don't think people understand indemnification.
No,
they really don't.
Definitely not.
No, that's true. We only have a couple minutes. I just wanted to ask you, what's the relationship with Judge Judy now since this all went down? Have you been in touch with her? Has she been in touch with you? Or, like, how do you feel when you put in so much time and so much great work, and now this? So how is it all shaken out?
So almost understandably, I didn't expect for her to contact me after this, you know. Though I have welcomed, you know, the possibility of her getting in contact with me. So far, I haven't heard from her, but it's not like we don't have each other's number. You know, she loves my wife. Okay. So this is an interesting aside. The day after we ended taping, which was April 15th, the very next day, my wife had brain surgery.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Wow.
And so I have been concentrating on helping her to convalesce ever since then. And it just so happens that somebody contacted me and asked me why I wasn't going to be on the show, and told me that there was this outpouring of support for me, you know, from my fan base. And I'm just like, you know, I'm surprised by it, but I also feel good about it. I feel good that I put in 25 years of good work. I've never done anything to bring any shame to the show. And all I was trying to do was explain to my fan base why I wasn't on the new show.
Right.
There was no bitterness involved with it. I don't do bitter. I do better.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That's really something. You know, I really respect that. And I think we can all learn something from how you've dealt with this. And looking back, what a great show and what a great time. We've had a great time with you, Bird, today. We appreciate you coming on. I got to listen to Bonding with Bird
because
you hear more of Bird's personality. But take good care and good luck moving forward. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
All right. So that's going to do it.
Petrie Hawkins Bird, everyone.
There you go.
Now I'm a big fan.
You are a fan.
Yeah.
Him and Lynn Toler.
That's right.
Lauren, I'm a big fan.
I am of you as well, Alan.
Thank you.
I mean, your voice is a little higher.
I know.
It's not as low
register.
I got
excited.
But, yeah.
Damn.
But you did pretty good.
I still can't. I'm going to cough, too.
You know.
We got next week.
That's right.
It's going to be fun. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week right here on Gervie's Law.